judges. And so these are the verses that we went through. I did not put down the judges that we have not yet studied. That's something that you will do as we do study them. The Judges 2:11, they served the Baals, they forsook God, and the Lord raised up judges. So let's start paying attention too. And God will often, like in our lesson today, it says that he sold them, that he gives them over, that he just pay attention to what God does when they disobey him. So 3:7, we have, when the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, they served, and ended up serving the king of Mesopotamia for 8 years. And Othniel, son of Kenaz, was their judge. What do we remember about that? Do we remember anything about that? That was just last chapter. Othniel.
No,
that we're coming up to him. Othniel. Yes, he married Caleb's daughter. Why? What did he do?
He went to battle.
I want us to remember that, because we're going to come to an odd verse in chapter 4, verse 8. And we need to keep in mind, as we go through this, when God numbers Israel, and some of you have gone through the first four or five books of the Torah, when God numbers Israel, how does he number them? Does he number the men and does he number the women?
No.
Does he number the children?
No.
Even the male children?
No. Up to certain age.
Okay, why? What happens at 20?
They're ready for service.
They're old enough to what?
To go to wars.
They're old enough to go to war. And so when God numbers the men, it's the warriors, the fighting men. Does that stay all the way till they die? No. They hit a certain point, and they're no longer considered men of that age. So when the Lord talks about a people, and he gives you numbers, it's generally talking about the warriors. Because when he starts out from Exodus on, and he sends them, we get into Joshua. What is Joshua doing? What is the whole book of Joshua about?
Conquest.
Why?
Because
the Lord told him to, and he told him progressively, go into the land and take over the land. You won't do it in one shot, but you will do it progressively. And who is going to do that?
The Lord.
The Lord is through the warriors. Okay, so then we come to Judges 3:12, and it said they did evil in the sight of the Lord. So they ended up serving the king of Moab, Eglon, for 18 years. What do we know about Eglon? We didn't really touch base on that last week.
He was a big fat man.
Eglon was a big fat man who had a big castle with a lot of gods all around that castle, didn't he? So who was Ehud?
He was a left-handed guy.
Why is that important?
Because he sunk his dagger into the flesh of Eglon.
They didn't check that side of him
because a right person would go like this, pull out their sword and go like that. So they checked his right side, the left side. What they didn't do is check his left side. And so he made a two-edged sword, stuck it deep into the king, got out of there. Then we meet another judge, Shamgar. Do we know much about Shamgar? That was it. Even in the song that we're going to hear today, we still get a limited amount of him, but we do know that he was a warrior, again, and he stood for the Lord. Okay, so after him, they did evil in the sight of the Lord, again. And now we're at where we are in our chapters 4 through 5. They ended up having to serve Jabin, king of Canaan, for 20 years. And then Deborah and Barak came. And so we'll talk about that. And we'll keep going over this because we are going to keep talking about the sons of Israel did evil. And then there was a deliverer. And so that's what we know about them. And I'm going to go past that. Who are the judges? What did you learn about them? How would you describe them? Othniel was called the deliverer who went to war. He was military. Enud was left-handed. He was a one-man warrior, one-man team. And Shamgar, who struck down 600 Philistines and saved Israel, and that's pretty much all we know about him. So, pull out your maps, because we're going to talk... Oh. So where did we start? Let's open our chapter 4. And the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord again after Enud died, and the Lord sold them. I thought that was an interesting statement. He sold them to the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan. What? How would you picture that selling? Do you remember when Esau sold his birthright? What did he sell his birthright for? Just a bowl of soup, a meal. And so somehow, somewhere, there is that picture, but he doesn't give us details. We don't have any details. We just know that God sold Israel to the hand of Jabin, the king of Canaan. And in that sense, Canaan wasn't a judge, but he was an oppressor. Yeah.
Well, kind of the picture that it gives to me is they wouldn't have been able to take over Israel if the Lord hadn't given them to him. So he just basically gave Israel to them.
Right, right.
Just, okay.
It's part of the punishment. He used Jabin to punish them, basically, is what he did.
It's not sold in the way that we would think of sold as to you give money. And
right. Right, right. He just handed them over in that picture. It's a verb. Actually, the verb is a verb of exchange. It's basically it's more like surrendering them. He surrendered them that they would be punished for their turning away from God. So then we have, then on verse... we have Sisera, who lived in Harosh Hagoyim, and the sons of Israel cried to the Lord, for he had 900 iron chariots. Have we heard iron chariots anywhere before?
Yeah, like Judah.
They were down there in Judah, weren't they? So where is the land of Canaan? I mean, what part of our picture?
The northern part.
It actually goes all the way down. It's just all over the place. Their Canaanites are, we are dealing with one man, Jabin, right now, who is the king of Canaanite, but he's not the king of all the Canaanites. Canaanite would be, I don't even know if we have a comparable term, but it would be, well, it'd be like the white people came in and took over the United States of America.
They were the natives.
But there are natives there, aren't there? Are they all a tribe?
No.
They're not a tribe, but they're the natives, the natural born. So these are the natives, in that sense, the Canaanites, but they're not all united together. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. So don't assume it's one country. Then he oppressed them for 20 years. So we have Jabin oppressing them. So now we meet Deborah. And what does Deborah do? Lapidoth.
And she's also a judge.
And where is she?
Well, she's sitting under the palm tree between Ramah and Bethel and Ephraim.
So she's down there below where Bethel and Ramah are in the palms of Deborah, right?
Uh-huh.
And on the... between Ramah and Bethel, in the hill country of Ephraim, the sons of Israel came to her for judgment. So then what did she do? And what is judgment, by the way? What's the difference between a prophetess? What does a prophetess do? She's a prophetess. Deborah's a prophetess, and she's also judging. What does a prophetess do?
She tells forth.
Tells forth.
So what she does.
Or whatever his name is.
She prophesies. She tells what God has said to her.
So she's his mouthpiece.
Yes, this is what you need to do.
So as a prophetess, she's speaking for God. Back in those times, prophetess, and you looked up Miriam too, prophetess often meant a singer of. Now that is, she does have a song, but that's not what we know her for. We know her for what she said to Barak or Barak or whatever his name is. She was judging. What is judging? We were talking about that last week. We'd think about it. Do you guys think any more about what judging is?
Well, the judges took care of the problems that people had between each other.
So they were like, in essence, a government without a government.
Yeah, I thought about Moses when his father-in-law came and he said, so many men for this, so many men for that, for these problems.
So why don't they have the same kind of system?
Because they're not really doing anything that God set up.
And they're really not united in that sense. So we have a picture of things going on. Do we ever hear about the priests so far? We really haven't heard anything about the priests so far. So the priests aren't functioning, at least not that we can see. And so Deborah is a judge. There, I'm assuming, other judges, but Deborah is a judge.
Well, and one thing that we've been told about judges is everyone's pretty much doing what's right and wrong.
Right.
So she is judging those that are coming to her, but everybody else, you get the idea that they're just pretty much taking care of themselves. It's not according to God's way, it's just whatever
they're doing their own thing. Yeah. Kind of get that, don't we? Okay, so she used to sit under the palm tree. She was a prophetess and a judge. And God evidently spoke to her and through her, because what do we learn in verse 6?
She summoned King, she summoned Barak.
Yes.
Calling up to her, where the rest were always coming to her. She specifically called this guy to come.
So she has a message for him. Because they've been under, and he, and what, who is he?
He must be the commander of the army.
Except for that they don't really have an army, so he's a commander of
volunteers.
So, yeah.
It tells who his father is and where he's from.
Where does he collect his army from? Okay, so he's up there. I circled where he is. And he collected his army from there, at least initially. And he was told to go to Mount Tabor to take with you 10,000 men from the sons of Naphtali and the sons of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army. Now he is a commander, with his chariots and many troops to the river Kishon. Now do you see where the river is up there? Oh, there it is. Okay, it's up here. Right in that area. That and this. Okay, so this is where Sisera is, up here. That's where Jabin is. This is where Barak is. And this, way down here, is where Deborah is. So she goes up and she tells him and says that God will draw him out. And he will give him to Ronan. And Barak said, okay, I'm heading out. Right?
No. If you come, I'll go.
Why do you suppose... Now, God doesn't really chastise him for that. He just says, you're not going to get the kill, basically. Why do you suppose Barak did that? Or Barak did that, excuse me. It could be.
I think because he knew God was with Deborah. God is speaking for Deborah, and it's kind of like whenever the wanted Moses to stay up on the hill and hold your arms up, then God is with them. And if God is with you, then the battle will go as God wants it to go. And he's trying to assure himself that, okay, I will do this, willing to do this, but I want God there too. And in his mind, I think
so. When you think about historically up to this point, there, God speaks through certain leaders. God speaks through the prophets, but God really hasn't had, like we have in the picture of our lives, we have a personal relationship with God through Christ and because of the Holy Spirit. And they did have the Holy Spirit, but God chose to speak certain ways to them. So I can see why he would do that, but she's told him God said that. So for him, there could have been a transition into, okay, God told me to do this. He's not going to leave me. He's going to tell me what I need to do. But see, that was very new. That would be a step. I can put a light on there back there for her. You guys tell me she's blind.
Not
on
there.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you.
I noticed a little flashlight moving around back there. So this is a time of transition too. And like I said, he doesn't chastise him, but she tells him he's not gonna be the one noted. Except when you go to Hebrews, what did you read in your Hebrews cross references? No Deborah. I thought that was interesting. But Deborah did turn it over to Barak and to obey. So they get up there. No, she doesn't. She was a woman. That would be against Leviticus 23, I think, something in there. Well, not that far. And we learn about verse 11 of chapter 4. We learn about Heber the Kenite. He'd separated himself from the Kenites. Where were the Kenites? They were way down below the picture. They were where Judah was. The rest of them were. But he wasn't there. Where was he? He was up there. He was right in this area right here. Because that's where she is.
And he was a Gentile.
He was a Gentile. But he was, he's in the line of Jethro, the father of Moses' wife. So they have, he's the one who told them about the 70 leaders and everything else, that family. But the rest of them are down below. They've mixed in with Judah, which has not been unacceptable so far. But up there, he is, and he is mentioned. Why is he mentioned? Okay, at least, I don't know if it's his wife, but somehow related to him he's from the sons of Hobab. Okay. So they told Sisera that Barak the son of Abinadab had gone to Mount Tabor. So what did Barak do? He did. So we have, she came up, Sisera came down to Mount Tabor. Barak came to Mount Tabor. What happened?
The Lord showed up.
So what happened?
He routed Sisera.
It rained and poured.
Yeah.
What did Sisera do?
He ran.
So he left his army. Not much of a military leader when you leave your army. Where did he go?
He left his chariot. He left everything. He
yep.
On foot.
He did.
It says he routed him in the margin, literally.
What was the end of them?
Well, the Kishon overflowed, evidently, because in the song it tells about the Kishon rolled over the chariots.
Gee, we've kind of heard that before, haven't we? You think Israel figured out.
The Red Sea.
I think if I were Israel, I'd have all my battles near rivers. Okay, what happened to them, though?
They drowned in
them. Every single one of them. They all died. So then we have him, and he runs away, and where does he run?
To Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite.
And what happens?
Well, because he had separated himself down here, and her husband was friendly with Jael and the king. You know, they were at peace. So Sisera thought he was in the home of an ally.
Safe. Yeah. Enough to sleep well. I don't sleep well if I'm not sure of something. Well, it's not my own bed.
You should
I should try what?
Milk.
I wonder what was in that milk.
It made him restful. It did.
Must have been warm milk.
She gave him water. He asked for water. She told him to buy him milk.
And we don't see it here, but she evidently gave him a bowl of curds, too, because we get that later on. So, can you imagine doing that? Taking a pig.
Under the rug. He just had to figure out where his hand was.
Well, I don't know that his whole body was under the rug. I think probably his head was sticking out.
Well, he tells her to stand in the doorway of the tent and lie that he's not there.
What? Now, as we're looking at this, I want us to think about her, because we get some more information in the song. But why would she do this? Her people, the people up there, were friends, were not in war with Jabin. They were allies.
Well, I think you just answered that when you talked about the family. I mean, she knew the history of the Israelites. So she knew that God was with
her. Look at, just for the heck of it, turn to chapter 5 and look at, see if I can find it. Verse 6, chapter 5. Go ahead.
I was just wondering where it says that the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman, and you're saying that's different.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. But I don't know that she would have known that prophecy.
Right.
God did. But why would she? She made a choice here. Why would she have made that choice? Somebody want to read verse 6 and 7 of chapter 5? See if there's something there that you can think about. Out loud.
In the days of Shamgar.
Thank you.
The son of Anna. In the days of Joel. Jael. The highways were deserted, and the travelers went roundabout ways. The pleasantries ceased. They ceased in Israel until I, Deborah, arose. Until I arose, a mother in Israel.
Okay, now take that. What did you learn? What? Go ahead, sit.
Economical conditions.
Well, what? Economics would be part of it. If you were a mother, wife anyway, we don't know if she was a mother or not, but if you were a wife, what is your duty? What are your jobs?
Protect your children.
Provide food. You're moving commerce. You're going back and forth between other people. You don't make and buy everything. You have to sell and buy. And what does it say about the highways? Why? Because there's a warring people going on and it's not safe. So she is sitting up there. She knows it's not safe. And here this guy comes to her door. Right to her door. And he stands for who?
The enemy.
He stands for the enemy. Right to her door. And she did what she thought was appropriate. Which we already know God had already determined all this.
Well, where she's at, too. I mean, of course, they didn't have a lot of quick communication, but surely, I mean, whenever Barak was organizing 10,000 troops marching them past that.
And it's not area. That far from there, is
right.
There?
I mean, surely she had heard about that or something.
And she had, in her world, had to determine who the winner is, would be, should be, what's best for her family, what side she's taking. She used what she had.
I read a commentary, too, that said that she was responsible for putting the antenna up when they moved, so she was really good at using those tools.
She knew.
And that probably she may have hit him on the head hard with the hammer thing before she did the peg, and make him unconscious and render him. Because I was thinking, even if he was tired, you start hammering a peg through somebody's head. So how'd she do that? But she probably knocked him out with a good blow.
Or maybe something somebody has said was in the milk.
Yeah, but the scripture says that he's exhausted. He was, but still, if you're exhausted, if somebody starts hammering a nail through your head, you're going to wake up.
Well,
Not if they're really strong and it goes fast.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, it makes sense that she might have hit him with that hammer first and not
Yeah. I just think he so trusted the situation, he was relaxed, and it says
well,
he was
he
out.
He had been up for days preparing for this war.
Right.
And then he ran.
Okay, so I'm just going to show you, well, we did that. Okay, so down here where Judah is where the rest of the people are from her family, basically. So you can see that it's a large difference, large distance. They're kind of up there all by themselves. In that sense, they have to take the protection of the people around them. Okay, back. I'm going to close this down. We're not going to be looking at this through the whole day. So, Kenites were not Israelites.
I know, but it seems to me I remember Caleb was not a Kenite. He was a Kenite.
Well, her husband was a Kenite.
Well, that's what I mean. I think there was a relationship there, too.
Well, they're still in the wrong place for that because Caleb is down lower.
Yeah.
I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea. Good land? I mean, why did anybody end up where they were if they weren't? I mean, we see that with Reuben and Manasseh, half of Manasseh and whoever else is over there. That was not God's choice. That was their choice. So he gave it to them. Any other comments on just that so far?
I missed that part about the storm. Thank you, Charlene. I didn't realize they had a big old storm.
We also had mountains that quaked. Okay, so back to four. Anything else we want to... So, alright, after she subdued Sisera, then God subdued Jabin. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The word subdued is the same word as humbled. So it's a humbling position. It's not humbling like you're not proud anymore. It's humbling like you're kind of crunched to the ground. Verse 24, the hand of the sons of Israel pressed heavier and heavier upon Jabin the king until, well, who is helping Jabin fight back? His warriors are all gone. His commander is gone. Until they destroyed Jabin, the king of Canaan. Okay? So, well, I guess I better stand up here. What did you learn about Deborah and Barak so far in chapter 4? We'll add more on it with 5.
Well, Deborah was a prophetess.
She was a prophetess?
She was a judge. She was a mother. I didn't have that.
I don't know if she was, but she calls herself the mother of
Israel.
So I'm not sure whether she was a biological mom or not. But
she
regardless, she was old enough to be considered a mother of Israel. She was an old, so she was a prophetess, she was a judge.
Wife.
Mother of Israel. Anything else so far in this chapter?
She's a singer. Oh.
Not yet. We'll get there.
Sorry.
Well, oh, that's okay. You don't have to be sorry.
She lives between Ramah and Bethel.
And I'm not even going to write that. But let's... Oh, yeah, I can. Ramah. R-A...
M-O-S. Ramah. No, R-A-M-A-H.
A-H.
Yeah.
Bethel.
Oh,
she even had a place that was called...
Palms.
The Palms of...
Deborah.
Palms of Deborah. So people knew where to find her.
The sons of Israel came to her for judgment.
Yep.
So she was bold, and she prophesied accurately twice.
What do we know about prophets? And they're prophesying.
If it didn't come
you just
true,
said it.
Were a false prophet.
Even once. Yeah. All it does is take it once. So we know that she was always accurate. Mm-hmm. But where did the prophecy that we saw, where was that prophecy pointing? Where was she telling Barak?
To trust God.
To trust God. Yeah. God had something for him to do. He was to trust God. Was it about what he should do with the next 10 years of his life?
No, it was right then.
Right then. Who he should marry?
No.
It was about what God had to do for Israel, for his people, for his purposes, and he was honored in the end because of that. Okay, at this point, can you think of anything else that we know
she
about them?
She called Barak.
Pardon?
She called Barak.
Okay, so she got the message. She got the message for Barak.
And she went with him back up to Kadesh.
Kind of picture this woman's life. I mean, she's going there with him. Yes, somebody said, well, we know she didn't fight, but here she is in the middle of the fight. So she's there. She isn't fighting, but she's there. Jael did.
It was important for her to be there, the influence that she was there. People could see her, and they knew God had spoken through her correctly and that God was going to do something. It gave them strength and courage.
She was the God's ambassador, God's prophetess.
And you know, I thought about how the like the Taliban and ISIS, how they don't like women, and it's if they were to die,
they're valueless in property.
And I wondered how the other army dogs, knowing that there was a woman there,
probably didn't think much of them,
did they?
Well, God has to do that with every generation to show. And it isn't our battle, ladies. We don't have to prove that we're valuable. God does that. That's his job. And if he calls us to something, then he's the one who's going to fulfill it, and he's the one who gets the glory. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if you're cleaning bathrooms or bringing cookies or teaching a class or whatever. It is God who is called for his purposes, and he's the one who gets the glory for those things. So what do we know about Barak or Barak?
You know how many bathrooms I clean?
she reported...
I used to clean houses. I know.
She reported what the Lord had commanded her to tell him, to go to Mount Tabor.
So what do we know about him?
And he responds with, I'll go if you go.
Okay, before that, why
he's
did she...
He's a warrior.
He's a warrior. We know that. Okay.
He's the son of Abinoam.
That guy. That family. Okay. I'm not putting the name there.
He would not go without Deborah.
He would not go without... Okay, so he received her. He believed her.
Sort of.
Well, I mean, he believed what she had to say. Because he got an army together, didn't he?
Yeah, 10,000 men.
I don't know that she doubted. I mean, I have to put myself in his position. If you came to me and said, God has this for, and I know you've been faithful, I know your character, I know what the background and everything else, but God's never done that with me before, you know? And it's kind of a little nerving. I mean, I can be a warrior because that's what I am, right? But as far as hearing from God, I haven't. And you have. So my faith is not that God can't do it. It's that that's what he has done. And so I'm trusting that. And we don't know what his process was. It'd be fascinating. I mean, we're going to all learn all this in heaven. There's so many details that we don't get here. We get the overview story, unless there's a detail we need to know. So he believed what Deborah said enough that he got, somebody said 10,000.
Yep. But another thing is, she was, when you look at the map, one thing I didn't realize, she was way down south and he was way up there, and they didn't have cell phones or nothing like that.
Maybe he wanted her closer in case God communicated something else. You know? Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming she went up to him to tell him that what he needed to do.
Well, she
called
for him to come to her.
She called him.
Okay. And he went down and then took her back up.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he also knew her position and that it would encourage women and give them, you know, strength and courage.
Sure.
There too. I mean, so.
Sure.
He was a warrior, but I'm not sure he was a warrior unto death because he fled from his army.
Sisera.
Oh, no, he left to get Sisera. He knew he had left. It was pretty much, I think, it was all done.
You think he left after his army was all, or left before his army was completely demolished?
Well, he gives us a, God gives us a picture that the army was demolished, right? But Sisera wasn't there. Because he had already fled. How Barak got that knowledge, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming from his troops that are there, the people that are there. But he wasn't part of that, so he went after him. Warriors were only from two tribes. It's kind of important to see that because we're going to get to a weird little spot when we get to five. Okay, anything else we know about him there? You said he followed Sisera. How do you spell that, Grace?
S-I-S-E-R-A.
And I thought I had too many R's up there. Okay, so he followed Sisera. The deed was already done. So do we know anything else?
He's listed in Hebrews. He's listed with the other mighty warrior guys.
Okay, so his
legacy
goes on.
They received no honor.
Oh yeah, that's right.
For the battle, because it went into the hands of a woman.
Right.
Say that again. Read it.
He says.
Verse.
Verse 9, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on the journey that we are about to take.
Right. Which is basically the honor is the kill, the final whatever.
So you won't be the one that finishes the deed.
And history knows about Jael, but the truth of the matter is you get to Hebrews and it's him that is spoken about. Okay, so he did have faith too. I mean, we have to remember that. But honor is what you give somebody who is the premier, you know, the one who won, and that wouldn't be him. So he did not, what did we start to say? The legacy goes on, did not receive honor
as a victor.
What did you say, hon?
As a victor.
Right. Did not receive honor as the victor. Okay. First, I'm just going to read this because so we get the picture. Then told Sisera that Barak the son of Abinoam had gone to Mount Tabor. Sisera called together all his chariots, 900 iron chariots, and all the people who were with him from Harosheth Hagoyim to the river Kishon. And Deborah said to Barak, arise, for this is the day which the Lord has given Sisera to your hand. So he still was the one who...
waiting for her command.
Right. The right day. And we know throughout the Bible that's pretty important. Behold, the Lord has gone before you. So Barak went down from Mount Tabor. So he was up at Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. The Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army with the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and fled on foot. So give me that picture there. What is verse 15 saying? Give me the sequence from 14 and 15. Barak is where?
He's with Deborah.
Yeah. Where?
By the river.
He's not by the river.
He's on the mountain.
Who's by the river?
Sisera.
Which goes from where he lived I mean, it's right near where he lived, to the river. Okay, so Barak comes down from the mountain with 10,000 men, and then what happens?
Then
the
Lord routed and all the chariots and all the army with the edge of the sword before Barak.
Okay, what does the edge of the sword mean? With the edge of the sword. Who is that talking about? Is that talking about Sisera's army or Barak's army?
No, that's Sisera's
army. Was killed with the edge of the sword.
Yeah,
well, the Lord brought it, so I would say it'd be the Lord doing it.
I would say.
I don't know.
Well, before Barak. Well,
the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots.
Well,
and all
he ran.
His
there was
10,000 men with Barak.
God's edge of the sword before Barak.
Doesn't that just mean that God gave them victory?
Well, Barak is what it could. That's why we have to look at chapter 5 to kind of get the clarity on this. Because right here, what it looks like is the Lord took care of Sisera, and Barak was watching. And watched Sisera run away and ran after him.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that's what it is, but that's what it kind of looks like. Right?
It's all happening with him there.
Right.
But Barak pursued the chariots in 16, and the army as far as Kadesh-Hagoyim, and all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword.
There you go.
Not one was left.
Not one was left. So.
So that's Sisera's army that falls.
But before that, he saw Sisera fled.
Now Sisera fled away on foot.
Yeah, but he fled away on foot in verse 15.
And Barak was watching him. But he still finished off the battle. So Barak didn't not finish off the battle. He went after him later. Mm-hmm. All right, so Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, and then we have that story. Anything you wanted to add about that story?
Well, in 17, Sisera fled because there was peace between Jabin and the house of the Heber, the Kenites. So they had they weren't at war with each other.
They weren't at war with one another, because who was Jabin at war with?
The Israelites.
He was oppressing the Israelites because God had sold them to him. But he didn't have to be at war with everybody. And Heber was small, comparatively, so he wouldn't be
a threat.
Right.
I read one thing that said that the house of probably at peace with both groups.
Mm-hmm.
Just like there.
Right.
But who is the they in verse 12? They told Israel that they verse 11 talks about people that came
late. I wrote that as a question. They who?
Yeah.
Who is the they?
Yeah.
If you go back to whenever you have a pronoun, you're supposed to go back to the last noun, which would be verse 11.
Which would be Heber the Kenite.
Heber the Kenite.
And so then he thinks, okay, this is a safe place to go, and he goes to the tent, and his wife kills him.
Right.
You just kind of turn it all
off. Oh, my goodness. You know.
Wonder where Heber was.
Is he kind of watching someone else, or what's he doing?
Good question. God doesn't tell us, does he?
No, he just says that... Jael went to meet Sisera and told him to turn her aside to my...
Yeah, so she actually invited him in.
And told him to go away.
Yeah.
And then he said, give me some water, and she gave him milk, covered him.
So what did we learn about Jael? She was the wife of?
She killed Sisera with a tent peg.
She enticed him into her home.
First, yeah, let's do that first. She invited him first.
She had the gift of hospitality.
I'm not going to her house for lunch.
But she had a motive.
She perhaps a gift of deception.
Yeah.
She wasn't Jewish. She didn't have the same rules.
So when she said, "Do not be afraid," she lied. You should be very
hospitable, but quite the liar.
Okay, fed him and
Okay, let's do Fed first.
Fed? Not have a delicate stomach.
No. She had the guts to do it.
But there was nobody in her road. She had to do something about that.
I think it's fine.
Fed and prepared his sleeping.
Well, it covered him.
With a rug. I really love to know what a rug looked like. I mean, what does that mean? Is it like, I just put, she fed and prepared his sleeping for.
We don't know that.
No, we don't.
What don't we know?
We don't know that she fed him. We know she gave him.
Well, we don't know it yet. We know it in
the chapter.
That's five. So we'll get there. We'll add to that. Okay, so she fed and prepared sleeping for Sisera, and then she took a
tent
peg.
Went secretly to him.
And hammer.
I think I go quietly too. Yeah. Did you have a hand up or are you just waving? Okay, she's just waving.
I think that's over lady.
We just contemplated this woman that she must have felt would have to have some fear deep enough in her to fight, knowing that maybe he would harm her. Or if you thought you were going to be raped by somebody or something,
take advantage
to take
of
that peg
time.
And pound into it, which just sounds so
well. I could see her.
I think it'd have to be one swift hoof.
I could see her doing that if she's trying to protect her family.
I think it could. There could be a lot of things, and God doesn't really tell us.
Yeah.
But also the fact that that she knew that this man was part of the problem, mm-hmm. part of the warring that's going on. I mean, if you think about it, just think about it for a minute. When you go, let's go to Sisera's mother. What is she saying? Why is Sisera not coming back with
Victor?
Right, and they're dividing up the women.
Yeah, dividing the wombs. They're dividing the wombs. They're not even women. They're wombs. Which is what?
Slaves.
Slaves. It's the people that's going to give the progeny of this band of warriors to the next generation. I mean, all that's part of it. That's all. They know what kind of people they are. They know what they do. Even the mother knew. Why isn't he back yet with his double wombs for all the warriors? I don't think there are twice as many women out there. There is men. Anyway.
And one more thing about JL is she came out to meet Barak and said, come, I'll show you the man who you're seeking.
Right.
So she shows Barak that Sisera is dead.
She doesn't want to get rid of that dead body.
It's probably a little heavy for her. She may have killed him, but he's kind of big to carry.
Just roll him up in the rug.
Yeah.
You don't connect 11 and 18, so if
go ahead.
Heber is her husband, and he was up, he was, if I look at this and I say, okay, Heber probably is the one that's telling Sisera that Barak is coming, and, you know, maybe he anticipates that he's going to run, and potentially run down to where his wife is. Could he have thought that before he left? Because it says Heber, the Kenite, separated himself. So if he separated himself there when he went to wherever he was at this particular point, could he have told his wife, you know, this guy may come. I just want you to be prepared.
Yeah, could be. We don't know.
Well, and the other thing, too, kind of along with that, is it was a prophecy. Right? Deborah had felt God telling her to say that. Now, if it's a prophecy about JL, Deborah didn't know who it was going to be about.
Right.
But it's conceivable to think that God spoke to JL and said, do this.
Could be, well, she could be a prophetess in her own right, just not to Israel.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean?
We don't know her history, do we? We don't know where she really came from.
And when we look at the Gentiles, all the way through Israel's history, there were Gentiles that attached themselves. They were the proselytes. Would they be considered Israelites? No, but they would be followers of God. The reason they couldn't be is because it's just like with us. We don't have the bloodline. but they would still be considered followers of God. In fact, the Lord didn't destroy the knowledge of the bloodline until the temple was destroyed in 60, and then they started losing the ability to know where the tribes were because they were scattered everywhere, and the lines were no longer being followed. You don't see it anywhere else in the Bible. So,
well, she had to have known the reputation of Sisera, you know, because he had been going through and oppressing Israel all these years, and he was probably a pretty cruel man.
Kind of ugly. So, whatever her motive was, she did the right thing. Kind of an icky way, but nevertheless. Okay, so what do we know about him? We know where he came from. We know he was a
commander.
He's killed by one.
He had 900 iron chariots.
900 iron chariots.
And he oppressed Israel for 20 years.
Severely.
Two P's or one P, Grace? Suppressed?
S-U-P. P.
No.
I think it was
one
P.
P-R-E-S.
I think it was right.
Yeah,
with two.
Two? Well, whatever. We'll have to vote on this later. Suppressed for 20 years. And was killed by a woman. Anything else?
He had a mother.
Boy, did he have a mother.
Still alive. A mother that was still alive.
Had an irritating mother. Even her whatever wasn't going to tell her what she knew probably had happened to him.
We don't know that
until
chapter
5. No. Okay, so we don't know that he had a mother. Put that in parentheses until we get to 5. Pardon?
Doesn't the fact that he ran away from his army say something?
Yep.
He fled.
Which makes you go, he really was just given that dominion by God.
He was
that
a
kind
mama's
of person.
Boy.
Amen. Somewhere I read there was a flood. You guys might have talked about this. And the chariots were stuck. And the horses attached to the chariots would have been stuck.
Right.
So they were more of a liability.
So into the hands of a woman.
And so probably a lot of the men got out of the chariots and fled. You know, it was probably chaos.
Probably why he got out of his.
I'm pretty sure it was chaos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Plus, if you're a commander and you don't have anyone to command, you have to either be a, like somebody said earlier, how committed are you as this commander?
He's going to die if he just stayed there.
Obviously, life was more important than honor for him.
He only had one choice, and that was death, regardless of staying there or fleeing. Somehow he thought if he fled, he wouldn't live.
And still, it was all part of God's plan.
Yeah.
Right. Because we're told before that that's going to happen.
Sisera was sold into the hands of a woman.
Do we have that? Okay, sold into the hands of a woman.
You got killed by a woman, but the Lord will sell.
Yeah. He was pursued by Jared.
I'm going to move Jabin down a little further.
Well, not even one was left. In verse 16, it says...
None of his army.
Said not even one was left, so that would give him a good reason to flee. I guess there's nothing left to command.
Yes, but did he leave before that? Or in the process?
I'm thinking...
Because we have him standing...
Before that, actually.
Because he was standing before Barak. I mean, Barak could see this going on, and that's when he fled. Before they were all... destroyed.
He probably could see as a commander, he probably could see that they were losing the battle and figured if he got out of there, he could live to fight another day.
Plus, we know God well enough to know he could have put fear right on that man. He just got out of there.
Yeah. I think it's significant that he was killed by a tent peg.
Because?
Not by the hand of a sword.
Tent peg at the hand of a woman.
At the hand of a woman.
Bob, that's real humiliation.
A tent peg and a hammer.
Not the tent.
I never, did I write that?
Yeah.
Where's your iron chariots now?
Yeah. How much good did that do you? Well, is what does that remind us of?
Crossing the Red Sea.
Crossing the Red Sea.
Yes. And the Jordan River.
What should Israel learn from this?
Don't go near the water.
No. No, I think I would. I'd have all my fights near the water.
He's in control of nature. He can cause whatever happens to happen.
And God is there. He's these are his people. I mean, one of the things we learned as we went into Judges was in Joshua's time they had seen God's hand work. Mm-hmm. And it makes very clear that there were no people left who had seen basically the hand of God working. And what was the response of the people? Were they listening? Did they even ask questions? They knew God got them out of things, but that's what they began to see him like. They knew they could go back to him to get them out of things. Sort of like a codependent kid who keeps coming back to their parents at the age of 50.
I got one of those.
Yours isn't 50 yet.
Yeah, but I still hope.
No, but to think about that, the picture is, they're not seeing him as the holy, righteous God. They're not seeing their lives are to be bent in submission to him. They use him as a cosmic genie. You know, I mean, we get that when we got to one of these places, or wherever it was on the thing, one of them said, yeah, we know, we ask that you do whatever you want to do, but get us out of it now! And that's kind of, it's like they never get the point that they are to be changing their life to measure up to God, not God is there as their cosmic genie. And we keep seeing this over and over and over again. Christian, can we do the same thing? Can we wait until, I mean, if the times that we pray are when we're in trouble, then are we not doing the same things? I mean, are we having a relationship with God? Or are we just using him there when we need him? And what is our relationship to be about?
Constant communion.
Constant communion. We love God because he loved us first. Not for what we can get out of him. In fact, to be to the place of, as the commanders were to be, I serve until I die. If I die in battle, I die in battle. Because it's he. We live in such a world, and everything in our world just pushes us to this, but we're the most important thing. You know, what is Nike's thing? There's the just do it, but there's also, it is the just do it. Why? Because you're in charge of everything, and you can, you know, you're the point of all of history. You're everything that there is. And of course you are. Your parents raised you that way, even though they really weren't necessarily around you much. You're the most important thing. And you get to a real world and find out you're supposed to be doing exactly the opposite in the Lord. To be able to submit everything you are to be his servant. So it's not ever about you, ever about you. It's about him. Because guys, our legacy is short. We're not going to be here real long. Are you doing what you're doing because of the Lord, for the Lord, who the Lord is, or to keep maintaining? Does that mean we can't enjoy life? We have all people. I was just reading in Psalm 65, I think, was talking about the joy of the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun and the beauty that comes. You know, God meant us to enjoy this world because he created it for us, but not to be stuck here. Just like Abraham was in the promised land, but it wasn't his home. He knew it wasn't his home. Can we let go enough to let him fill all that stuff up that we use everything else to fill up with? Okay, so where are we?
I added he fled to Jael's tent, was given food or milk.
Mm-hmm. So I'll just kind of put that in there. Fled to the tent, was killed by a woman with a tent peg. Okay.
The way I put it is fled, drank milk, fell asleep.
Drink. There you go.
Sure.
Yep. Not much for a warrior, is it?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah. Not that I have an answer. Go ahead.
have the same access directly to God that we do.
Right.
They had to go to the prophetess. And
or the priests.
No, the priests. And they were long distances from people. So, I mean, to get to the prophetess, they had to go somewhere. They didn't have the scriptures like we do. So, to maybe start, I mean, so they're going to fail because they don't have direct access to find out what he wants. They have to travel long distances. So, I mean, isn't this also a picture of how much better we have it because of Christ?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just...
Take it a little bit further.
Because they don't have
what are we studying right now? What is the name of our book?
Judges.
What are the next thing? Well, next thing is Ruth, but that's not sequential. Let's put Ruth aside for a minute. What's after that? What comes after that?
Samuel and Kings.
Samuel and Kings. Okay, so what is being set up in Samuel and Kings that's different than what we have in Judges?
Kings.
And what comes along with all that?
Priests,
which comes along with all that? What did Solomon do that David desperately wanted to do?
Build
the temple. And so they knew where to go. It was centralized. It became the focus of everything they were. So now they had a new centralized focus place in Jerusalem, which, what we've got, they don't. So even though they have priests, we're not hearing about them because they don't really have any place to go. One we did hear about sold himself, pretty much.
Yeah.
So just also start watching how it's being put together and realizing that this particular book was probably written by Samuel. So part of it is looking back. Part of it is as it happens. The reason we know it's looking back is some of the cities that he says weren't even cities when Judges was going on. So he used the name from where he wrote. So we're just watching this, how he is showing, and we are learning that you need a leader. Not necessarily a king. It wasn't really ever supposed to be a king, but you need a leader to pull the people together. They were looking for a leader. They kept looking for leaders. And then when the leaders died, they were back again to the life that was without God, in essence.
But their leader should have been God. It should have been
that exactly. It should have been a theophany. Yeah. And this thing in Judges, in essence, is part of the theistic history of Israel. They are to be, and we are. We're watching God take care of them. I mean, it's like spoiled little children running around. It's like 3-year-olds going all over the place. Hissy fits, fighting, you know. And then mom says, or dad says, and then they pull together for a while, and then they're off in their own little thing again. And that's what we're seeing with Israel. Okay, what do we know about Jabin?
He was a king. He was king of Canaan. Lived at Hazor.
I'm not putting the places down, but you can add where they lived for each one of these people. Okay, and he had a commander of the military. And they were like a standing army. And they had the 900 chariots of iron. Those have to be taken care of. They have to be kept in a certain place. Somebody's overseeing them. So they have a standing army. Israel does not have a standing army. In fact, we saw Barak did what? He gathered them. He gathered people from certain places. He didn't have a standing army. Okay. Anything else about Jabin?
God subdued Jabin.
Okay, first, before we get there, for 20 years...
He subdued Israel.
Severely. He oppressed the sons of Israel severely.
Yeah.
And God gave him... God gave, or sold, or what were some of the other words we used?
Exchanged.
And I'm going to put as a punishment. technically, as parents, we don't punish our children. We discipline them for a purpose. He had, throughout their history, been disciplining them, but sometimes they just had to take the rod. And the times, these times where they're in, where they're being oppressed is the rod, the time of the rod. Okay, so what else? He died, right? How'd he die?
God destroyed him.
He was destroyed by God. I think it's interesting, and we'll see this more and more as we go through the rest of the Old Testament. I think it's interesting how God uses a people, even like Nebuchadnezzar and the kings after him, the Syrian kings after him, and how he uses them to chastise Israel. But you get the point that there is a point where they can actually turn to him themselves. We see that with Nebuchadnezzar's life. He knows that there's the God of heaven. He knows there is no other. We don't really know where he ended up in the end. But with all of these kings, when God gave Israel over to them, if they're paying attention, which we don't see that they do, they could know that it was the God of heaven doing them. I think even for them there could have been repentance. But they didn't, and there wasn't. And you've got something. Oh, it's a pen. I was thinking
Don't worry.
No, I'm not worrying. I just thought it was glasses. At first.
I forgot it.
So just as we start learning about these people that God uses to chastise Israel, just pay attention to them and see how God does what he does and see where they fit in history and in the world. Okay, so let's go to anything else you want to add here.
Weren't they supposed to be passing down the history of the things that had happened before to the next generation, telling the stories and everything? Did they just stop doing that? Or they weren't doing that at all?
Well, they knew about God.
And Moses had, in the law, did they not have the law?
They had the law
because there was very specific.
But where is it?
Yeah, that's my question.
In Judges, where's the law?
You don't see it anymore.
You don't see it until you start getting into the Samuel and the Kings.
So is it lost?
Don't know. It's not being used.
Well, who has it?
David didn't have a relationship with God before he was made king, or even when God spoke to Saul. Someone had to be passing on some information because David wouldn't have had that relationship, which is why God selected him.
We have to always remember there's always a remnant. We aren't seeing the remnant, but there's always a remnant. Well, Deborah was a remnant. And what that all involved, we don't know because we don't really know her family. We didn't get the whole history. We just see that she was a prophetess for God. She was also a judge for God. How many others were going around doing this? We don't really know. And like I said, but where are those priests?
And maybe prophetess and judge carried, but they looked to those individuals because they had some remnant, some history. So not only was it speaking for God, but maybe they would go to them to judge because they had the history.
Right.
So they wouldn't have had a priest, or maybe they wouldn't have called it a priest. They would set up these individuals.
Well, we know the Levites are around there somewhere because they're screwing up things.
But God can keep his word. Just like the Dead Sea Scrolls, they were buried, but God knew where they were. And
right.
They were revealed in due time. Look at the kings of Judah. That
Josiah is going to be one we're going to run into, and he was a young man and had a deep faith with God, and he is the one who they found the law again, and he started reading the covenant of the law. But at this point, all we know is there is a law somewhere. We don't even hear about the Levites at all. Have you read anything about the Levites so far? But they do have land. What are they doing with it? I don't know.
Well, in the first we hear about anything like that again, of sacrifices or anything, is in 1 Samuel in verse 3, where it's Elkanah, and he's going
with his family, with his two wives, up to the Lord of Hosts in Shiloh.
He calls him a priest, doesn't it?
Yeah, to sacrifice to the Lord of Hosts in Shiloh. Yeah. Just as a certain.
So we'll be talking about this more, but right now we're looking at a theocracy. But they are not following the theocracy, and we get that in verse in our next chapter. So let's look at our next chapter. Yeah.
Says that the sons of Israel were the ones actually that destroyed Jabin.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, God subdued Jabin, and then the sons of Israel destroyed him.
Right.
And
so
then pressed heavier and heavier. They kind of figured it out. We've got to do something here, and they began to do it. But they did do it. God required it of them. You know, I mean, that was the right thing.
And they had watched what had happened already.
Yeah, I just kind of see that sometimes it's God's part and our part, you know.
Sometimes, and when you see God move, like first we have Deborah that talked to Barak. Barak went around and gathered them up. I'm pretty sure they were pretty scared. They went out to the river. They saw what God did there. That gave them more and more courage. Right. You know, just like with us. So the moral of that story for us is you've got the Holy Spirit. Don't get that far away. You know, keep it up on a daily basis. All right, so five.
Can I ask one quick question? Do we have any idea how long this process took? What would you estimate? I mean, because if she
well, going up there doesn't take that far for her. I mean, we look at that and think, whoa, she's all the way down there. Look at Israel sometimes, not that big a place. You can walk it in less than 3 days. So,
But and then how long would it have taken him to assemble an army of 10,000
yeah,
individuals?
All of that.
So if I mean, can you let's say it took a month? The rumor, because I'm sure the rumor about the plight of Sisera's life was spread around.
Right.
So it had to have gotten back to him at some point, and you know it was just a matter of time. But can you imagine? I mean, I'm thinking maybe even if it took 6 months. I know it wasn't like a day, and this doesn't seem like it played out even in a month. But just having that rumor around that, oh, I'm going to die,
well, he
or even the king.
No, I don't know that he knew he was going to die, but I mean, I'm not sure
but
he knew about that.
You don't think the prophecy would have spread, or they would have shared that? You know, I'm sure they didn't have the daily news.
I don't
news,
know.
But
yeah. It could have been why he was fearful and ran.
Yeah.
What we can know is that he knew that Barak was going to Mount Tabor, because that's where he was headed.
And he knew Barak had an army
right.
And went
right.
to Mount Tabor.
Right, but he was pretty sure he was fine, because he had 900...
Well, and had been succeeding for so long.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. So they were going on what they knew, too. All right, so chapter 5. Then Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinoam, saying that on that day, saying... that the leaders led in Israel, the people volunteered. That's just, that like that needs to stick in our heads because that fits us too. The leaders led in Israel and the people volunteered. Bless the Lord. So it all comes back to bless the Lord. Hear, O kings, give ear, O rulers. I, to the Lord, I will sing. I will sing praise to the Lord, the God of Israel. Anybody look up singing and praising? Singing is pretty much what it means, but it was also associated with prophetesses in the early stages, because think again of Miriam. It was associated with Levitical worship, but we don't see that here. But I will sing praises to the Lord, the God of Israel. Praise. What is praise?
Giving God the glory.
Giving God. Giving God the glory, and if you're a singer and you're praising God, it's...
speaking of His greatness.
It's poetic in its very nature, isn't it? What would they laud God for in praises?
For the things He has done.
What they have just seen Him do. So they're repeating the things that they saw Him do. So that's what our song's about. The mountains quake. Now, we didn't get that in the beginning. But the mountains quaked at the presence of the Lord. This Sinai at the presence of the Lord God. What's it talking about there? Probably.
I thought it was
when Moses went to get the Ten Commandments.
The law.
Yeah.
More than likely, that's what it's talking about. In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were deserted. Travelers went by roundabout ways. The peasantry, what is peasantry? Yeah. Who are they?
People.
They're people. They're rural people. They're the ones who are the farmers and the shepherds. They're the people out of the cities. The common people, but they're out of the cities. They're not in the cities.
Like the farmers.
Okay. Yes, the farmers, the shepherds. It's what David was. The peasantry ceased. They ceased in Israel. Why? Because of this. Same reason that the highways were deserted and the travelers went round about. They were not safe. Until I, Deborah, arose a mother. So what does a mother do?
Takes care of her children.
She pulls her children into those wings and protects them, doesn't she? I mean, God calls himself a mother hen gathering. I arose a mother in Israel. Now, this is kind of a parenthesis, and we need to look at this one. New gods were chosen. Then war was in the gates. Not a shield or a spear was seen among 40,000 in Israel. What is it talking about? New gods were chosen.
They followed other gods.
So they came to Israel. They were to follow God. They moved out into the various places. They didn't eliminate. Chapter 1 tells us they did not eliminate the Canaanites from the land. And so there became the process of intermarriage, picking up the idols of the area. So they now have new gods. Now, what did God tell them all the way back when he designated through the Torah, and as I said to you earlier about the men over 20, what were the men over 20 always to be? Even if they were shepherds, they were warriors. They were always to be prepared for war. And what does this verse tell us?
They didn't destroy the idols.
War was after
King. Not a shield or spear.
This is the new Israel here.
They were not warriors.
They were not warriors. In fact, God had to rise up a mother. Well, what do you think of that, ladies?
What he needs to do is get the job.
He will. He waits for the open heart, and guess who had it? Not a shield or a spear was seen among 40,000 in Israel. So what is the condemnation there? They weren't doing what they were supposed to do. They were supposed to go into the land. They were supposed to rout out the gods, the people's gods, and they were not to intermarry, and they were doing all the things they were not supposed to. But they still remembered there was a God of heaven, but he was there as their cosmic genie, right? Because they would cry out to him after oppression. So we have these people, and then it says, verse 9, my heart goes out to the commanders of Israel, the volunteers among the people. Bless the Lord. It's kind of a reiteration of what we just saw above. You who ride on white donkeys. Why, have you ever seen a white donkey?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jesus rode on a white donkey.
And what was the statement?
The ruler.
Actually, it wasn't a ruler.
King.
Wasn't the coming king. It was coming peace. He came as king to bring peace. You who ride on white donkeys, who sit on rich carpets, and you who travel on the road, sing. Were they supposed to be riding on white donkeys? Because it stands for what? Peace.
Who's they? You know what I got out of that? Which is, I'm very weird, I know.
Verse 9.
Well, I'm going 10 and 11. I'm thinking, okay, there's how they got the message around. That there were
white donkeys.
No, they were like, it looked to be like singers. No,
this is afterwards.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in general, I read that as like, okay, there's these musicians, these singers, who learn these songs about what has happened. And they travel around.
With white donkeys.
Exactly.
The only problem with that, Bonnie, is what do we know about the highways? What do we know about the highways?
Yeah, except for these guys who were peaceful and spread
no.
newspaper
yeah.
information around
their peace. is a false peace.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, I don't think this means that.
Well, it's a false peace because what are they supposed to be being?
Warriors.
They're supposed to be warriors, and instead of being warriors, they're at peace with their new gods in their new places, and they put their arms to rest. So they're not carrying their arms anymore, which they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
So these are bad guys. These are lazy guys. These are not good guys. That's why she said her heart goes out to the commanders and the volunteers among the people. And then it goes, you who ride on white donkeys, you who sit on rich carpets. Does that sound like a good thing?
No.
And you who travel on the road. She's trying to tell them, you got that right, Bonnie. She is trying to tell them to sing of what has happened.
So, I don't have the right version today because I lost it. But
there's no right version. What does your version say?
It says, you ride on white donkeys sitting on your saddle blankets, and you who walk along the road, consider the voice of the singers at the watering places. So they're not the same.
Yeah.
Right. They're to be listening to the witness.
These people on their white donkeys are not doing the right thing.
They're not the same thing.
They should be listening to those
who are
singing.
Who are the singers?
These are not the singers. They're to be listening to the singers. She's the singer right now.
I'm just, okay.
You're going too far.
But am I... I know in different countries and stuff like that.
Let me read the way she said it again. Read the way she said
it.
Bonnie, just a second. Read what...
You want 10 and 11?
The donkey thing.
Okay. You who ride on white donkeys, sitting on your saddle blankets, and you who walk along the road, consider the voice of the singers at the watering place.
They're acting like there's nothing going on. And Deborah's saying... Listen to what God is doing. Listen to what God has done. You who are acting like there is nothing, you can live your life any way you want. You can be on the white donkey. You can have your rich stuff and live the way you want. Listen to the words, because we know, we just talked about it. Where's the law? We don't know where the law is. So how are they going to know about God? At this point, they're knowing about it by the songs that are being passed on.
And in 11, it shows a little bit more. And it says, at the sound of those who divide flocks among the waters, they shall recount the righteous deeds of the Lord.
So what are the songs? Are there songs of praise?
Yeah, and recounting the deeds of the Lord.
That are recounting the deeds of the Lord. For what purpose? It's right there. It's right there.
To remember what God has done for him.
The righteous deeds for his peasantry in Israel. Where are the peasants right now? Well, and they set up there. Let's go back to it. They ceased.
Yeah, they're hiding. Or they're
I'm not out there as a shepherd taking care of my sheep when there are guys going all over the place with swords in their hands. I'm going to pull my sheep in and kind of lay low.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes, there you go. Hide in the wine press and Gideon. Well, we'll get there. But get the picture. Remember, this is flowery illustration. The illustration, I mean, you can't say there's no shepherds out there. People are eating, but they're not out there. Because what do sheep do?
They're just,
it's a nice afternoon and you're out there making sure the wolves don't come in. Only now you start seeing on the roads highwaymen, kind of. And so you're not going on the roads. You're going, if you're doing anything, you're doing around, about, back.
And I'm sure they took what they wanted. And
exactly. Yeah. I mean, we see this in all wars, don't we? Okay, so, and they're oppressing them. So they pretty much think anything Israel has belongs to them. So the peasantry is not functioning like the peasantry. And here it says, they recount the righteous deeds of the Lord, the righteous deeds for his peasantry in Israel. He's telling them they're now free. Through the song, the righteousness of God. They're learning about the deeds of God which are righteous. Then the people of the Lord went down to the gates. Awake, awake, Deborah. Awake, awake. Sing a song. Arise, Barak, and take your captives, O son of Abinoam. Then survivors came down to the nobles. The people of the Lord came down to me as warriors. From Ephraim, those whose root is in Amalek came down. Following you, Benjamin, with your peoples. From Makar, that's the only name I know that one with. I couldn't find what all these things were doing. Makar commanders came down. From Zebulun, those who wield the staff of the office. The prince of Issachar were with Deborah. As was Issachar, so was Barak. Into the valley they rushed. What valley do you think that is?
Jezreel.
The Megiddo Valley, or they're out up there by the river Kishon.
They rushed at his heels among the divisions of Reuben. That's the first time we really see him. There were great resolves of heart. So somebody was talking earlier about how in this would enlighten our heart. This would encourage us to watch Deborah first moving and then Barak and the soldiers going. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear the piping for the flocks among the divisions of Reuben? There were great searchings of heart. Gilead remained across the Jordan. And why did Dan stand? Now you're beginning to get condemnation more here. Gilead remained across the Jordan. Why did Dan stay in ships? Asher sat at the seashore and remained by its landings. Zebulun was a people who despised their lives even to death. And Naphtali also on the high places of the field. What do we know about Zebulun and Naphtali? So they were willing to give up everything to do what God had called them to. This is not like they want to commit suicide.
They were nearer to the problem, right?
Right. They saw it. Yeah. But all of Israel was supposed to be supporting all of Israel. I mean, that was the whole thing about them being on the other side of the Jordan. Okay, you can stay here, but you've got to help clear out the land before you go and rest in your own. And that never all came about. Verse 19, the kings came and fought, then fought the kings of Canaan. And at Tanakh, near the rivers of Megiddo, they took no plunder in silver. The stars fought from heaven. You get this picture? Wouldn't you love this? Know this in the original language. The stars fought from heaven. From their courses they fought against Sisera. The torrent of Kishon swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrents of Kishon. My soul, march on with strength. And you get the real picture of what went on in 4 here. Then the horse's hoofs beat from the dashing of his valiant steeds. Curse Mirzas, said the angel of the Lord. Anybody look up Mirzas?
Yes, it was, they don't know exactly where it was anymore, but evidently, and possibly the reason they don't know that is because it was wiped out, it was cursed. Evidently they did not support the armies, and they were in a position to do so somehow, we can assume, because he didn't curse Asher, he didn't curse, you know, the other tribes for not coming in, but he...
And this really, we don't even know what tribe they're of.
No,
there's no history of them, and there's nothing
right.
else in all of the Bible
right.
about these
but
people.
Somehow they were cursed for what they did not do.
For what they did not do. So even with Dan and Asher, I have to assume some people came, because God didn't wipe out the whole people. But Mirzas is not a tribe either.
Right.
We don't even know what they're doing. So they are cursed, and they are never seen again. Anywhere in the Bible that you never read of it again, you can't find it in history, they were wiped off the face of the earth. Utterly cursed its inhabitants. They were pretty utterly cursed. Because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the warriors. And again, we don't really know what that means, we just know what the outcome was. We know that God called them and they didn't come. Verse 24, most blessed of women is Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Most blessed is she of women in the tent. He asked for water, she gave him milk. In a magnificent bowl, she brought him curds. Now that's added. So let's put that up. Yes, you can't read my writing. I can barely read my writing. She reached out her hand for the tent peg, her right hand for the workman's hammer.
She wasn't left-handed.
She wasn't left-handed. She struck Sisera. She didn't have to be because, you know, he was out cold. She smashed his head. She shattered and pierced his temple. Between her feet he bowed. He fell. He lay. Between her feet he bowed. What is that a picture of?
okay.
He's dead as a mackerel.
In the way she covered him up. And so when I read that, you got, and then it says she used the peg to go through his temple and stuck to the floor. Here, if he fell after she gave him a blow to the head, then he wasn't laying down.
Okay, when we think about poetry, which is, this is what this is, poetry is more illustrative, sometimes even allegorical. It's trying to give us a picture. What is the picture that this part is trying to give us?
At her feet.
Which is what?
It's a victory.
Victory, humiliation, humbling. She's the warrior he lost. He ended up at her feet. That's the picture. Sometimes you just have to ask, what is this telling me? Rather than honing in all the details. Even when you go through, that was one of the hardest things for me to deal with, but when you go through the first five books of the Bible, when God says like 200,000 men, he means big. You know, 2 million. He means big. He doesn't mean there were exactly 2,500 men. And, you know, for me, I'm an American, and I have a Greek background, and I want 2,463 men. But he doesn't do that. And so sometimes, to us, it would seem like an exaggeration. But again, I have to go back to the point. What is the point? What is the picture he's building here? And so the picture he's building here is a woman with a who fed him, who took care of him, killed him. And in that, I mean, you can't look at her and say she wasn't hospitable, she didn't do what was right, but then in the end she did what was right for the Lord. So she was kind in her killing.
She
or
gave
something.
Him his last meal.
Yeah, she gave him his last
meal.
Yep.
And she smashed him on the head first so he wouldn't feel
the thing about
the
Numbed it first.
Well, it does say she struck Sisera and smashed his head, she shattered and pierced his temple, and we'll just let the Lord handle that one. Between her feet he bowed and fell he lay. It fell can be too. If I'm like sleeping and I get that, I might slump, but I may still be on the ground. So it doesn't necessarily fell like he was standing up. She took the tent and smashed him in the head and he fell.
Now look at how liberal you are with her, but if I say people are riding around singing them like donkeys, I get in trouble.
You have to stick to what you know in the rest of the Bible, and a donkey is somebody who's riding in peace.
I see everything kind of blurry when I'm reading, and so
you want to go with me?
So sometimes I don't. Yes, I do. Pretty soon, I kind of just like, okay, and I'm reading enough. I think I get this.
You're right. They didn't have newspapers. They had heralds that went around and gave the news.
But and the songs, by the time it came to the songs were to be praising and giving God glory for what he has done and accomplished. And we see that in the time of David a lot. In fact, that whole picture of David and the singing of songs of what their great feats were ends up in the temple having singers who were professional for the rest of their lives. Their ministry was singing, and it all came out of that thing. What did they sing? Look at Psalms. Read what Psalms say.
Their songs right away.
Finish this battle, and then they sang. Right, and then passed on.
Relatively new news.
Yeah, great things that God did. Out of the window, verse 28, she looked and lamented, the mother of Sisera through the lattice. I could actually have put her up there.
Oh, really? She saw the mother of Sisera?
No, she was looking and lamenting, why isn't he coming? More of a, you know, my boy is supposed to be back, now he's not here.
So the she here is Sisera's mother, right?
We only know that because of the second part of the same thing. The mother of Sisera through the lattice. So she's looking out at the lattice, and she's lamenting, and she's his mother, and this is her question. Why does his chariots delay in coming? Why do the hoofbeats of his chariots tarry? Because a mother always has hope, right? Yes. But her princess, her wise princess, would answer her, indeed, she repeats her words to herself. She doesn't tell her. She knows what it is. She knows what's going on. Her wise princess would answer her, indeed, she repeats her words to who? Herself. So she's pretty much figured it out. Probably everybody's figured it out by now, but Sisera's mom didn't. She's still living in hope. Are they not finding? Are they not dividing the spoil? A maiden, two maidens for every warrior? By the way, the word isn't maiden. That's why I said what I said earlier. I looked it up. It means womb. To Sisera, a spoil of dyed work. A spoil of dyed work embroidered. So not only the dyed work, but something somebody had worked on. Because they took over, they took everything. They didn't just... She's expecting them to not just kill the warriors, but to get the people's stuff, too.
They must have did some beautiful handiwork then.
Well, we know because we look at the temple, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, even the tabernacle, when they built it, and the gold
right.
and the purple.
Right. And back then, they didn't have our little industrial places where they do them by great big machines. People did those things by hand. Everything. I mean, if you think about what a woman did in her daily life, she had to provide clothing for her family. I mean, we get that in Proverbs 31. What did the Proverbs 31 woman do? She was always working to provide for her family. And you do get to a point where you don't, and I don't want to wear the brown again. Let's make it a little bit prettier, so you do a little embroidery on it. Dyed work of double embroidery on the neck of the spoiler. Thus, let all your enemies perish, O Lord, but let those who love him be like the rising of the sun in its might, and the land was undisturbed for 40 years.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord. So anything you guys want to add to that? We are at 11:15.
Not add to it, but I have a question.
Sure.
Are we doing the next thing?
Why wouldn't we?
Because you said you had to prepare for our ministry.
That's next month.
Oh, okay.
I need to say that, guys. Doesn't it say that in the calendar?
Yeah.
It says February 20 whatever.
Calendar.
Church bulletin, yeah. No, it's not, you're not the first one who's asked that, so.
No, I asked her to.
It's next month, and it isn't until this class is done. And then we have time between this class and we have creative exchange, and then a week off, and then the... Okay.
Very good.
There's eggs there, guys.
What time now are we getting together?